Hello and welcome to another SearchDataManagement.com podcast. I'm news editor Jeff Kelly. The technical challenges of a successful business intelligence project, from maintaining adequate data quality to integrating data from multiple transactional sources, are well documented. But cultural barriers are as much, if not more, important to the outcome of any BI project, according to Howard Dresner. Dresner, an independent consultant considered the father of business intelligence, says companies need to develop a performance-directed culture, one in which business and IT work together to ensure the success of any BI or performance management project. Today, SearchDataManagement.com has the pleasure of speaking with Dresner, whose new book on the topic of BI and culture, called Profiles in Performance, Business Intelligence Journeys and the Roadmap for Change, debuts in October 2009. Welcome, Howard.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be here.
So your new book, Profiles in Performance, Business Intelligence Journeys and the Roadmap for Change, is all about how the culture of an organization helps determine the success or failure of a BI or performance management deployment. By culture, what exactly do you mean?
Well, first of all, let me step back for a moment and tell you a little bit about the sort of the motivation for the book. I thought initially I was going to be writing sort of a sequel to the first book, just looking at best practices surrounding performance management and business intelligence. And as I started doing the research, I realized that there was more to it, and I needed to focus on sort of the underlying causal factors of success or failure. And as it turns out, it's this thing that we call culture, and I've been trying to find a better word for it, but by golly, that's the word. That's what it is. It's really about individual and group belief systems and attitudes and the resulting behaviors associated with it that determine whether or not a business intelligence or a performance management initiative will succeed or fail.
Okay. Well, and you write that to be successful, companies should develop what you call a performance-directed culture. What is a performance-directed culture, and why is that, in your opinion, one of the keys to business intelligence and performance management success?
Well, performance-directed culture, it's in a more evolved organization, if you will, that sort of behaves in many ways as a single organism. So it's everybody sort of pulling together, and they're sort of unusual. Most organizations haven't achieved it because at the end of the day, human beings are sort of tribal creatures. So we prefer operating in small groups of like-minded individuals, and I suppose that we're wired that way to survive going back to the early days, the dawn of time, if you will. But they really don't serve our purposes these days in our somewhat more evolved state. And as a result, you go into organizations and you have the finance tribe, and the finance tribe is competing against or thwarting the efforts of the sales tribe or the marketing tribe. So what we're trying to do and what I'm trying to achieve with this book is to sort of identify these challenges that organizations are facing and also underscore some of our natural behaviors as human beings in an effort to overcome some of that. And, you know, one of the ways or one of the criteria that I've used to identify these performance-directed organizations is alignment with the mission. And we can talk about that more fully if you'd like. Also, things like transparency and accountability and conflict resolution as hotspots, areas where we really need to focus our attention to get everybody to behave as that single organism.
Mm-hmm. Well, so before we kind of get into how to create that type of culture, I mean, what are some of the, in your opinion, the barriers, the main barriers that seem to block companies from achieving and sustaining a performance-directed culture?
Well, of course, it's human beings at the end of the day, but probably one of the greatest obstacles within an organization is that lack of a well-articulated mission that everybody can align with. Everybody wants to feel like they're part of something larger than themselves and that they're doing something that's important, that's valuable, you know, creating a legacy even. And it's kind of interesting, when I was researching the book, one of the things that I took a look at were the mission statements for the Fortune 500 companies. And it was shocking, actually, to see how bad most of them really were. You know, so many of them were talking about things that had absolutely nothing to do with the business or their real mission whatsoever, the reason that, you know, that they even exist. So many of them wanted to talk about shareholder value or green initiatives or something else that's completely tangential the reason that they're in business. So I think first and foremost, individuals need to understand what that mission is. They need to believe in that mission, and they need to understand how their efforts align with that mission. What's their contribution to the mission of that enterprise? And then you need leadership. You know, people want to be led. They want to be inspired. And I have to say, in so many organizations today, the CEO is not really a leader. That individual may be a competent manager. They may understand the enterprise. They may understand the industry, the underlying technologies. But they're not really a leader. And leadership is one of those things that when you see it, you know it. So I think it's a combination of those things. It's having a compelling mission that everybody understands their contribution to and they feel good and they feel empowered by, and also having that leadership.
Mm-hmm. Well, what other advice do you have for creating that type of culture in terms of transitioning to a kind of a fact-based decision-making type of culture that so many organizations, unfortunately, lack at this point?
Well, I have to say that the fact-based part of it is sort of an enabler, if you will. The other things that you need to have in place, and I can tell you what they sort of the six criteria are, because I developed this maturity model, which is at the heart of it. I've actually filed for a patent on the maturity model because I think it's that unique and that important. But there are six criteria that are broken down into three groups. So you have strategic criteria, you have operational criteria, and then you have some technology criteria as well. And then there are four levels of achievement associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the strategic ones are the alignment with mission and transparency and accountability. The operational ones are conflict resolution and action upon insight. Now, the action upon insight really is sort of performance management and business intelligence related, in the sense that when you learn something, what do you do with it? And then the technology ones are also somewhat BI related as an enabler, and that's trust in data. Is there common trust? Do we believe what we're using? And then even more specifically surrounding the technology has to do with the availability and the currency of the information. Now, is it complete? Does it match the applications or the decisions that we're trying to make? So the technology is the underpinning. We need that as a key enabler to support the culture, if you will. But the more important elements are how we feel about the organization and what we're doing and how we work together collaboratively and cooperatively, and are we transparent with each other, and do we share openly, and do we support other people's initiatives within the organization? And that really doesn't have anything to do with business intelligence or data, even though it's there to support them in many very important ways. Now, it's also important to note there are also four sort of forces, as I call them, that have to be present to develop a performance-directed culture. And this comes out of using that maturity model to measure the organizations that I worked with first. And those that had achieved what I considered a performance-directed culture had these four key things, these four forces present in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the order in which they actually arrive is less important than them actually being in place. And the first one, which you might guess, is visionary leadership. And I'm talking about the CEO, the most senior level management within an organization, having to be that sort of a leader. People that, an individual that knows where he or she are taking the organization and can communicate that in a very compelling way. The next one is, and this is a tough one, I call it business advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when all of the business functions agree to break down the barriers, to stop behaving tribally. So finance has to open up. Most finance organizations are very closed organizations, ultra-conservative. They don't like to communicate with others. they need to open up. Sales needs to open up. Everybody has to not only share, but support other people's success within the organization. And that's a really tough one because, for the most part, those organizations sometimes compete with each other, but at least at a minimum are, you know, treat others with sort of benign neglect, right? So we'll let those guys do their thing. We'll do our thing. And every so often we'll come together and compare notes. So we need to have that business advocacy where everyone is actually actively working together, cooperating, communicating, collaborating, sharing, and actually supporting the success of those other organizations as well as their own. The next is what I call organizational activism. And that's, you have to have people with passion that are committed, that are enthusiastic, that will evangelize new ideas and innovation within the organization. And they can show up anywhere. And they also have to be relentless. And that's what I found in so many organizations that were successful. They had these crazy zealots in their midst that simply would not take no for an answer. And they weren't abrasive or abusive in doing so. They were actually very supportive and encouraging to the organization to teach them new ways to do things. And sometimes it came from IT. In other cases, it came from finance or business operations. And in one instance, it was the CEO himself that was this activist within the organization. And then finally, and this is the only technology one, data literacy. And maybe it's not even technology, right? But people really need to have a fluency and a comfort level with using information as part of the decision-making process. So this fact-based decision-making process is, in fact, important to support this kind of a culture.
Well, in your book, you tell the story of four organizations that, in your opinion, have successfully created this performance-directed culture. And, of course, I know you don't want to give too much away. You want people to buy the book. But can you give us a sneak peek, maybe one of them, and how they managed to kind of sustain that type of culture?
Yeah. One of them that is, they're all very, very interesting, and they're all very successful in their respective industries. And I will tell you what the four industries are anyway, and then I'll cite one example in particular. Two of them are not-for-profits. One of them is a public radio corporation, the largest, I think, at what they do. The other one is a hospital or a healthcare provider, and I'll tell you, that's Cleveland Clinic, a fascinating organization. And then the other two are privately held commercial enterprises. One is in the hospitality industry, and the other one is a manufacturer. And what's notable about each one of these is that their approach to achieving, or at least striving for, a performance-directed culture really came from four different places. One was CEO-led, one was finance-led, one was IT-led, and one was led by business operations. And as a result, their evolution is quite different. So it's but they achieved their objectives. Just the path they took was quite a bit different. And I've actually plotted them on line charts, so you can actually see over time, as conditions changed, how their performance improved against what I call my performance culture maturity model. Now, Cleveland Clinic in particular is a very interesting one because they're not small. My intent initially was just to focus on smaller organizations because my belief was that a large organization could not as easily become a performance-directed culture. And Cleveland Clinic impressed me because they're not small. They're over $5 billion in revenues as a not-for-profit organization. Very large, very expansive organization. Yet they have, in fact, achieved a performance-directed culture. They have all four of those elements that I talked about. They do have visionary leadership. Their current CEO, Dr. Cosgrove, is a very impressive guy. The business advocacy is there. It started when medical operations and finance started to break down the barriers because they would go into the senior management meetings and they would have different indicators. different numbers for the same indicators. And so they started in earnest to work together. And when Dr. Cosgrove came in, they seized the opportunity because as a visionary leader, he wanted to start doing things a little bit differently. So by supporting some of his initiatives, it created this sort of virtuous cycle And eventually they started to be viewed as a strategic organization and as a strategic initiative. And, well, the rest is kind of history. But what is so notable about them is that they are so large and that they were able to achieve a performance-directed culture in spite of that size. So there's hope for everybody, I think.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Howard. And I encourage all our listeners to go out and get a copy of your book.
Jeff, thanks very much for your time today.